delightful couple. Charming woman. Gifted lad. Remarkable talent. Graceful outlines. Perfect evening. Great success. Interesting case. Glorious night. Exquisite scenery. Capital dinner. Stimulating conversation. Restful outing. Good wine. Happy ending. Touching gratitude. Lucky Ridgeon.
Ridgeon returns.
What's that? Calling me, Bonington?
No, only congratulating you on a most successful evening. Enchanting woman. Thoroughbreeding. Gentle nature. Refined.
Blenkinsop comes from the hotel and takes the empty chair next to Ridgeon.
I'm so sorry to have left you like this, Ridgeon, but it was a telephone message from the police. They found half a milkman at our level crossing with a prescription of mine in his pocket. Where's Mr. Dubedat?
Gone.
Blenkinsop rises. He is very pale.
Gone.
Just this moment.
Perhaps I could overtake him.
Blenkinsop rushes into the hotel.
He's in the motor, man. Miles off. You can... No use.
They're really very nice people. I confess I was afraid the husband would turn out an appalling bounder. But he's almost as charming in his way as she is in hers. There's no mistake about his being a genius. It's something to have got a case really worth saving. Somebody else will have to go, but at all events it will be easy to find a worse man.
How do you know?
Come now, Sir Paddy. No growling. Have something more to drink.
No, thank you.
Do you see anything wrong with Dubedat, Bonington? Oh, charming young fellow. Besides, after all, what could be wrong with him? Look at him! What could be wrong with him?
There are two things that can be wrong with any man. One of them is a check. The other is a woman. Until you know that a man's sound on these two points, you know nothing about him.
Ah, cynic, cynic. Oh, he's all right as to the check, for a while at all events. He talked to me quite frankly before dinner as to the pressure of money difficulties as an artist. He says he has no mices and is very economical, but there's one extravagance he can't afford yet can't resist, and that is dressing his wife prettily. So I said, bang plump out, let me lend you £20 and pay me when your ship comes home. He was really very nice about it. He took it like a man. And it was a pleasure to see how happy it made him, poor chap.
But when was this, may I ask?
I joined you that time down by the river.
But, my dear Walpole, he just borrowed £10 from me.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was really hardly borrowing, for he said heaven only knew when he could pay me. I couldn't refuse. It appears that Mrs. Dubedat has taken sort of a fancy to me.
No, it was to me.
Certainly not. Your name was never mentioned between us. He is so wrapped up in his work that he has to leave her a good deal alone. And the poor, innocent young fellow, he has, of course, no idea of my position or how busy I am, actually wanted me to call occasionally and talk to her.
Exactly what he said to me.
Pooh, really, I must say.
Now, look here, Ridgeon. This is beginning to look serious.
Blenkinsop, very anxious and wretched, but trying to look unconcerned, comes back.
Well, did you catch him?
No. Excuse my running away like that.
Anything the matter?
Oh, no. A trifle. Something ridiculous. It can't be helped. Never mind.
Was it anything about Dubedat?
I ought to keep it to myself, I know. I can't tell you, Ridgeon, how ashamed I am of dragging my miserable poverty to your dinner after all your kindness. It's not that you won't ask me again, but it's so humiliating. And I did so look forward to one evening in my dress clothes. They're still presentable, you see, with all my troubles left behind, just like old times.
But what has happened?
Oh, nothing. Oh, it's too ridiculous. I just scraped up 4 shillings for this little outing, and it cost me 1 4-pence to get here. Dubedat asked me to lend him 1/2 crown to tip the chambermaid of the room his wife left her wraps in for the cloakroom. He said he only wanted it for 5 minutes, as she had his purse. So, of course, I lent it to him, and he's forgotten to pay me. I've just 2 pence to get back with.
Oh, never mind.
No, I know what you're going to say, but I won't take it. I've never borrowed a penny, and I never will. I've nothing left but my friends, and I won't sell them. If none of you were able to meet me without being afraid that my civility was leading up to the loan of 5 shillings, there would be an end of everything for me. I'll take your old clothes, Collie, sooner than disgrace you by talking to you in the street and my own, but I won't borrow money. I'll train it as far as the 2 pence will take me, and I'll tramp the rest.
You'll do the whole distance in my motor.
They are all greatly relieved, and Walpole hastens to get away from the painful subject by adding,
Did he get anything out of you, Mr. Schutzmacher?
Schutzmacher shakes his head in a most expressive negative.
You didn't appreciate his drawing, I think.
Oh, yes, I did. I should have very much liked to have kept the sketch and got it autographed.
But why didn't you?
Well, the fact is, when I joined Dubedat after his conversation with Mr. Walpole, he said the Jews were the only people who knew anything about art, and that, though he had to put up with your Philistine twaddle, as he called it, it was what I said about the drawings that really pleased him. He also said that his wife was greatly struck with my knowledge, and that she had always admired Jews. Then he asked me to advance him £50 on the security of the drawings.
What? No. $50?
Of course, I couldn't lend money to a stranger like that.
I envy you the power to say no, Mr. Schutzmacher. Of course, I know I oughtn't to lend money to a young fellow in that way, but I simply hadn't the nerve to refuse. I couldn't very well, you know, could I?
I don't understand that. I felt I couldn't very well lend it.
Well, what did he say?
Well, he made a very uncalled-for remark about a Jew not understanding the feelings of a gentleman. I must say you Gentiles are very hard to please. You say we are no gentlemen when we lend money, and when we refuse to lend it, you say the same. I didn't mean to behave badly. As I told him, I might have lent it to him if he had been a Jew himself.
And what did he say to that?
He began persuading me that he was one of the chosen people, that his artistic faculty showed it, and that his name was as foreign as my own. He said he didn't really want £50, that he was only joking, that all he wanted was a couple of sovereigns.
No. No, Mr. Schutzmacher! You invented that last touch! Seriously, now!
No, you can't improve on nature in telling stories about gentlemen like Mr. Dubedat.
Oh, you certainly do stand by one another, you chosen people, Mr. Schutzmacher.
Not at all. Personally, I like Englishmen better than Jews and always associate with them. That's only natural, because as I am a Jew, there's nothing interesting in a Jew to me, whereas there is always something interesting and foreign in an Englishman. But in money matters, it's quite different. You see, when an Englishman borrows, all he knows or cares is that he wants money. He'll sign anything to get it, without in the least understanding it or intending to carry out the arrangement if it turns badly for him. In fact, he thinks you a cad if you ask him to carry it out under such circumstances. Just like the Merchant of Venice, you know. But if a Jew makes an agreement, he means to keep it and expects you to keep it. If he wants money for a time, he borrows it and knows he must pay at the end of the time. If he knows he can't pay, he begs it as a gift.
Come, Looney. Do you mean to say that Jews are never rogues and thieves?
Oh, no, not at all. But I was not talking of criminals. I was comparing honest Englishmen with honest Jews.